Let's do look at our sermon passage this morning. We're in Matthew 7, verses 1 through 6. I'm realizing this morning that the shift from the summer-spring uniform to the winter one, I'm about a week early on the sweater. Whew, it's toasty. Man, this is a weird time of year in Wisconsin. Like, what do you wear? Anyway, that has nothing to do with this passage. I'm just a little hot. But anyhow, let's look at the passage before I say anything else that's in my head. Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. Judge not that you be not judged, for with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that's in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take that speck out of your eye, when there's the log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is holy. Do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. This is the word of the Lord. And I'll say, thanks be to God. Earlier this week, I was finishing up doing some studying here, and I was pulling out on to Donofrio. I think that's how you say it, if I got the emphasis in the right spot. But anyway, it was kind of busy. That street sometimes gets busy with cars coming down, and I was trying to get out there on the street, and I was waiting. I finally pulled out, but right about the time I pulled out, this guy from the condos, like, pulls out in front of me. It was so frustrating. And I had the voice of my grandmother in my head. It was actually me thinking it, but it had her voice. I don't know, that's weird. Because she would say sometimes, like, it's just so selfish to drive like that, just thinking only of yourself. And I was thinking that, like, that is so selfish to drive like that. Here, I've been sitting here waiting this whole time, and you pull out in front of me, and it's just selfish. But then as I drove off, it kind of dawned on me that maybe he'd been sitting there for a while, too. And maybe he pulled out and I pulled out in front of him. Because what I was upset about, I was frustrated with the guy pulling out in front of me while I pulled out in front of him. It's kind of hypocritical, isn't it? I mean, if you think about it. And hypocrisy is not an uncommon problem for us. It shows up in our driving, or shows up in my driving. You probably drive great, so there you go. It shows up in our driving. But, you know, it shows up in lots of other areas of our life as well. Think about what hypocrisy is. Hypocrisy is, it's holding other people to a standard that we don't hold ourselves to, right? It's wanting other people to act a certain way when we're willing to give ourselves a pass on that. Hypocrisy is, I think, one of our culture's cardinal sins. This chapter 7, verse 1, I think, is now the most quoted verse in maybe all of America. Don't judge me is usually how we say it. That's a little bit of a mistranslation, But it is, here it is. Hypocrisy is one of our cardinal sins in our culture, even if we tend to apply it hypocritically. And I would suggest to you this morning that the problem of hypocrisy, you know what it stems from? A fundamental failure of love. Hypocrisy is a lack of love that we see in public figures that rant about other people's failings while ignoring their own. Hypocrisy shows up in us when we exercise consternation at the sin of others. Often it's the sin that we're most familiar with, so we recognize it quicker. Hypocrisy is a problem. Nobody likes hypocrisy. I mean, nobody likes other people's hypocrisy. You see the problem here. Hypocrisy is an issue. And the problem of hypocrisy marks this passage fundamentally. But the problem of hypocrisy in this passage, it's not just kind of dangling out there, like Jesus was talking about some stuff and then he thought, well, let's talk about hypocrisy and we'll get back to some other things. The problem of hypocrisy shows up in this passage in a certain context. In this text, hypocrisy is a particular problem because of this, because it gets in the way of a very important part of our life in the kingdom. So let me see if I can demonstrate what I mean by that. Now, to get at this text, there are at least two big interpretive questions that we want to note here at the beginning. The first is this. What do we do with this word translated judge? It says don't judge. Now, the Greek word here, so Greek moments, pardon my nerdiness. Again, Stephen's excited. But the word here is the word krino, and this word has a certain semantic range, by which I mean this word can be used in several different settings with a certain kind of connotation to it, and there's a little bit of variety in there. It can mean to express an opinion in order to influence change in somebody. It's a way to judge. It can also mean to impose a judicial ruling, right? A court judges. There's that kind of an idea. It can also mean just to generally draw a conclusion or to decide something, to judge. There's a breadth of semantic range here for this word. What does it mean to judge? Now, there's overlap between those connotations, and which one we lean on or which one we take determines really what we do with this whole passage. Like how you understand "do not judge" really makes a difference on what you do with this whole thing. And interpreters have gone lots of different directions. So what does it mean? Well, there's some things that we can say that it doesn't mean. Maybe that gets us a little bit closer. To say "don't judge," it can't mean "never establish any judicial systems," because both testaments actually set up judicial systems of a kind. It doesn't mean that. We also know that the word can't mean "don't ever make any kind of discerning distinctions. Don't ever do that." Well, it can't mean that, because in just a handful of verses from now, Jesus is going to tell us to do that. Watch out for false prophets. That's a discerning distinction. So it can't quite mean that. Now, some think it means don't ever make any sort of judicial rulings, especially ones you don't have the authority to make. And that's a good distinction, I guess. And I think that that's wise enough counsel, but I don't think that those get at the heart of what it means in this passage, in this context. I think that the best way to understand this word is along the lines of the first thing that I mentioned, that is, to express, even if only internally, an opinion or a thought so as to try to influence change in somebody. What I mean is that Jesus is calling our attention here to be careful about the ways in which we see each other and seek to change each other. Now, I'm going to let that sit there for a minute and come back to it. Hopefully it'll make a little more sense then. So the first question, though, the first interpretive question, what do we do with this word "to judge"? Now, the next big question is, what do we do with verse 6? My goodness, what is that verse all about, right? Do not give dogs what's holy. Do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. This is an enigmatic passage, to be sure. And it could mean different things. It could just be this independent thought that is sort of plopped into the Sermon on the Mount, completely disattached from the other things that have been going on. And some see it that way. They see it as just kind of, it's a random compilation of things that, and here it is. Here's this verse. I don't think that really works for several different reasons, but I'll just say that some see this as instructions, and some historically have seen it as instructions on communion. But wow, that's out of left field, right? And a bit anachronistic, but anyway. Others have looked for allegorical associations for each of the pieces, like, okay, who are the dogs? What's holy? What's a pearl? Who are the pigs? What does it mean for them to attack you? Well, that doesn't seem to fit the Sermon on the Mount that well either. So what do we do with this? If we take it on its own, I would say that it actually interrupts a rather consistent family dialogue, a section of the Sermon on the Mount that's really, it's governed by things like "our Father" and "your brother and sister," this kind of family language that's been happening in this passage that goes from at least chapter 5, verse 43 to chapter 7, verse 11. Is there a way to understand that very enigmatic verse in a way that cooperates with the kind of communication that the Sermon on the Mount is, and also cooperates with the context, kind of the flow of the context? Of course, I asked the question, you know, I think that the answer is yes, there is a way. And it's this. I think that what's going on, and I'm going to try to put these together in a second, but we read this, "to not give dogs what is holy, to not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you." I would like to suggest to you this morning that verse is a lot like a very similar phrase that we use when we say something like, "listen, you can't argue with a drunk," or "you can't reason with a 3-year-old that's melting down." Same idea, right? Same idea. There are some people who will just not hear you. And when you press it, it's going to lead to a painful retort. I think that that's actually what verse 6 is saying. But now the question is, so how does that all work together, right? What's the point? Well, Matthew 7:1, again, I said earlier, maybe the most quoted Bible verse today. But I think that when we read this as, "hey, listen, don't judge me," that kind of an idea, I think that actually really misses the point of this passage in its context. Verses 1 and 2 are full of a really fun wordplay. That doesn't come out as much in most of the translations. It doesn't come out as much in the ESV. I understand why they're doing it the way that they do. But the wordplay goes something like this. It says, with the judgment, don't judge so that you're not judged, for with the judgment you judge, you'll be judged. It's the same word all the way throughout. So Jesus is using wordplay here. And then it goes on to say, and with the measure you measure, it will be measured to you. Jesus is using this kind of fun, little quippy wordplay for a point. It's setting the stage or rhetorically highlighting this issue of hypocrisy in a way that kind of brings it out, right? But I think the real point of the passage and the way to understand this right is to recognize that much of this passage, the heart of this passage, is actually verse 5. Verse 5, you hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. I think that is the missional heart of this passage. We need to deal with our hypocrisy. We must deal with our hypocrisy. Because our hypocrisy gets in the way of our attempts to act in love towards one another. This is the problem here. You see, if we look at the Sermon on the Mount, we see that God is establishing a kingdom in which He's restoring His will on earth, just like it is in heaven. Jesus is creating a certain kind of people that live together in a certain kind of way, and this restoration of His will is happening through His people that are to be a light and to be salt, all that stuff that we've seen earlier in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is calling people to live out, here it is, the characteristics of their Father. Their Father that we saw last week cares, loves deeply. So far in the Sermon on the Mount, we've seen that that's what our Father in heaven does. He loves us. He cares for us. He's shaping us more and more into His image. And I think that's actually the biggest point of this passage. And it's what I want us to see this week, that because God, our Father, is a God of love, a God who cares, a God who invests, that's what we must do for one another as disciples, as family members in His family, as those that live in His kingdom. We are to take on the Father's characteristics in our interactions within the family. Did you notice how much family language is involved here? It's talking about you've got this problem with something that's in your brother's eye or sister's eye. You see, this love for one another actually does include discernment and trying to help others out when they've got issues that beset them. But what I think is going on in this passage is that Jesus is pointing to us by raising the issue of hypocrisy with this fun wordplay. I thought it was fun. Can't you see? I'm giddy. But he's raising this issue that we are to deal with the problems that we see in the family. We are to recognize that there's stuff going on. We are to look around and see that there are people that need to deal with the stuff. But there's also a manner in which we are to approach one another, especially in these times when we see problems in the family. Because can we just go ahead and admit what we all know? There are problems in the family. We know this, don't we? If we spend any amount of time with each other, we recognize that there are, we'll call them quirks, proclivities. That makes it sound better than, oh my goodness, that's a problem. But you see, in the family, there are problems. And sometimes, you know what, those proclivities and quirks, they're really destructive. They're destructive for the person that is experiencing them. They're destructive for the person that's wielding them against other people. These problems, these quirks in the family, they are actual, real, live problems. And sometimes they perpetuate unhealthiness at profound levels. The truth is that we do have stuff in our eyes, and it needs to be noticed and removed. That's true. If we love one another, we shouldn't expect to see problems in the family and not have a desire to do something about it. There's nothing loving about that. But our Father loves us, so we must love one another. It's just that our hypocrisy in our attempts to deal with problems in others makes a wreck out of things. That's the problem. The problem is not trying to help your brother or sister out. The problem is the way in which our, I was going to say your, that's going to sound so, The problem is our hypocrisy gets in the way of us actually loving one another. So what do we do about that? Well, you'll be glad to know that I think that this passage actually gives us three simple steps. I don't usually do three simple steps, but it's going to happen today. How can we deal with our hypocrisy and actually love one another, even in the middle of actual problems that need to be dealt with? Let me point out three things, three steps, if you will. And the first step is right there in that wordplay of verse 1. If we really want to deal with our hypocrisy and love each other, you know what we need to do? We need to put the brakes on our criticism of one another. I can't help but think about a hypothetical situation that maybe might occur occasionally in the back of a black Chrysler minivan where some kind of injustice occurs and both parties want to point it out, right? You may know what I'm talking about here. If you've never been in the back of a minivan with children fighting each other, this is what it's like, hypothetically, of course, because my family is perfect. Anyway, but what happens is something happens in the back. See, that's where the two oldest live. So you know who you are. Yeah, I see you back there. So, but what will happen is there's this injustice that occurs, and they both see a problem. You know what they do? They start lobbing criticisms back and forth. It's not just them, by the way. This happens with us. And then finally, at some point, let's say a father figure in the family, more often than he cares to admit, finally has just, the noise is enough, and finally he just says, like, enough! I've raised my voice in the van, by the way, I just thought I'd tell you that. Enough! Because sometimes there's so much just barking criticism that you can't even hear what the real problem is. You can't get to the bottom of the real issue because everybody's lobbing criticism at one another. Now we live in, if there's ever been a countercultural sermon application, get ready because this is it. We live in a culture that provides lots of opportunities to comment on everything. And we tend to be glad to comment. People tend to give their comments without sometimes the courtesy of a measure of restraint. And you know what? There's a benefit to giving constructive feedback. But you know what else? James chapter 3 says, the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. Yowza. You know what? When we're lobbying criticism back and forth at each other, when we don't, what needs to happen is at some point, if we want to truly love each other without hypocrisy, at some point we have to just put the brakes on the criticism. Stop with it already. And I think that is the first step toward dealing with our hypocrisy and actually loving one another. It's that lost holy skill of just zipping it already, right? Proverbs 11:2, you can tell I've been reading Proverbs this week, I guess, is this, that says, whoever belittles his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding remains silent. There's some wisdom in Proverbs, I think. It's like it's a whole book of wisdom. Anyway, that's the only thing. It's a wisdom book. Anyway, the first step in loving one another, truly loving one another without hypocrisy, I think, is just putting the brakes on our criticism of each other. Step one. There's a second step in this passage to dealing with our hypocrisy and loving one another. It's in verses 3 and 4. And this is where we see this absurdly comic picture. Jesus is really funny, I think. He's got this picture of a person with a log sticking out of their eye trying to deal with a little tiny speck in a brother or sister's eye. Isn't that a great picture? I think it's a great picture. But, you know, it made me think some time back, I don't think it was this last time, although it might have happened then too, I was painting in our living room, and I was kind of on the ladder or whatever I was on painting, and I realized that there was a drip on the trim. So I did what you normally do when there's a drip on the trim, is I reached out to just kind of dab it off. And you know what happened? The paint that was on my hands got on the trim. I think that what happens is this. Sometimes in our attempts to love other people, sometimes it truly is love, sometimes it's finger quotes love, we don't stop to take a look at our own hands. I'm going to go clean that up. But I don't recognize that I'm just spreading my own dirtiness around. Second step, I think, to loving without hypocrisy is to actually be self-aware. To to actually take a look at what's going on in us before we go wading into the stuff of other people. That's a tough skill to learn. But if we want to deal with our hypocrisy and learn to truly love one another, we need to learn some self-awareness about our own sin and about our own brokenness. Once we've stopped criticizing long enough to take a breath, before we go any further, we need to deal with our own sin and our own hearts. That's step two. So step one to loving without hypocrisy is putting the brakes on criticism. Second step is taking a moment to be self-aware enough to actually deal with your own sin. But then there's this third step in the passage to dealing with our hypocrisy and loving one another. And that gets us back to what I'm saying is the missional heart of the passage in verse 5. Because verse 5 says that once we get our own log out, optometrists everywhere probably love this passage. Once we get this log out, only then will we have the clear-eyed vision enough to actually help our brother or sister. Verse 5 is not saying just leave them, crying out loud, you've got your own problems. It's not saying that. Verse 5 is saying, take the log out. Deal with the log in your eye, and then you'll be able to see clearly enough to care for one another. This passage does not mean that we have to be perfect to help other people. If that's what this passage said, pulpits around the world clearing out, even as we speak. It's not saying you've got to be perfect before you can go offer any help. That's not the point. This passage does, however, mean that we approach one another with a spirit of humble association, not distant, prideful pontification. But it's often the latter that we do. Let me stand here from a distance and tell you what's going on. Or as we say in parts of Oklahoma, how the cow ate the cabbage. I learned that this is not a universal phrase. But let me just stand here and tell you about how things go. That's not loving without hypocrisy. To love without hypocrisy is to humbly associate, to get into the mix with the recognition that we've got our own problems too. See, having stopped the noise of our criticism and having taken a look at our own hands, our own hearts, that's when we're able to approach one another as fellow pilgrims on the way, instead of approaching others like the self-appointed parade leader who's from the stands giving directions. That's not love without hypocrisy. See, when we manage to get these hypocritical logs out of our eyes and view each other with humble clarity, you know what it gives us? It gives us a better view of what the problem really is. We get a better sense of just how big a deal the issue is or isn't. See, because sometimes with a log getting in the way of our vision, we think small things are huge. Once we get the log out, we can get a sense of what's actually going on. Because, you know, there are things worth tackling together. And there are things just worth leaving alone and trusting it to the Lord to figure out in his own good time. It takes wisdom to know the difference. And it takes a great deal of self-aware humility to know the difference. And with clear eyes, we can actually heed the point that I think is going on in verse 6. You know, sometimes we leave things alone because it's not as big an issue as we thought it might have been. And other times we have to leave things alone because people just are not in a place to receive our love. Sometimes we see a problem and our love makes us want to get in there and do something, even a humble, unhypocritical love. And sometimes people don't want that. And I think that this enigmatic, truly enigmatic passage is pointing us in that direction. There are times when we just have to step back and say, I would love to love, but I can't do that here. In any case, when we practice the habits of putting the brakes on our criticism and further practice a humble self-awareness, that's when we can enter into clear-eyed care for one another as a loving family member following after the loving care of our Heavenly Father. We love Him because He first loved us, but you know what? We love each other because He first loved us. This week I found myself thinking a lot about Jesus. I hope that's not a surprise to you. But I was. But I was especially thinking about the way that he has approached us. The way that he's stepped into a world of people with far worse than specks in our eyes. You see, Jesus stepped into the morass of our sin, and he aligned himself with us as his family. Think of passages like Psalm 22, where in the midst of my brothers, Jesus, this messianic picture of Christ leading us in worship. Other passages where he's not ashamed to call us brothers, sisters. Just thinking about how Jesus stepped into the morass of our sin and aligned himself with us. You know, he didn't stand at a distance snarkily pointing out all the problems. Oh, yeah, look at that. And look at that. That's what we do. You know, the chippy little comment at the end of the article. Jesus didn't stand back or hide behind a screen or anything like that. Jesus stepped into the fray. I think that's part of what's so brilliant about the incarnation. Jesus didn't stay out of it with a sort of upper Midwestern sensibility. I don't want to bother anybody. Don't want to bother. He didn't do that. And Jesus didn't even say, ooh, that looks bad for you. Jesus didn't do that. Jesus didn't give us the hang in there, camper, you know. It's not what he did. But rather, without a shred of hypocrisy, he stepped into this world of sin, and knowing himself truly, he stepped in to fix things, to demonstrate his love by getting in the mix. And he did that by bearing the brunt of our sin, and even now walks among us by his Spirit until he returns. That's what it looks like for him to love us. But it's also what it looks like for us to love one another, to be done with our hypocrisy, to with humility recognizing who we truly are. We're broken sinners in need of Christ, just like that person with a speck in their eye. And with that awareness, we can step into the fray with one another, not with hypocrisy, but with actual love, walking alongside each other, recognizing when there are problems that it's worth addressing together, not standing off at a distance, pontificating. I think the point of this passage is that it's a call for us to abandon our hypocrisy and humbly love one another, just like our fathers loved us. Because our Father does love us, so we must love one another. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, thank you for demonstrating the love of the Father to us. I pray that you would help us to do the things that we've seen in the passage, to zip it with the criticism, to take an honest look at our own hearts, and then to humbly, clear-sightedly step into the fray with one another. Make that so in us, Lord, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.